Well, hello again. Sermon this afternoon is on a subject that is either joyful or not so joyful with many people in the world, and sometimes more than we would hope even in the Church of God. The sermon topic is conclusions on how to live life. We all are wondering about that at times. Jesus said, our Savior, older brother, and the head of the church, said this, I came that they might have life and that they might live it to the full. Now, that sounds strange concerning life, considering religion and what many people think religion is. Often they think of religion as having to give up, give up, give up, give up. And you don't ever live a full life because there are so many difficulties in the Christian life that you're just not able to live a full life. Or, as has happened to many, by the time God decided to invite them into his arena, they have made decisions that have left bad marks on their life and have made it very difficult to have a full life. But that didn't mean anything to Jesus in a sense. He didn't say, I came that some might have life. He said, I came that they, all people, might have life and that they might live it to the full. But living life to the very, very full is sometimes very difficult for people who know God's truth. Well, what Jesus said was he came that they might live it to the full. That sounds great. Actually, it's what everybody wants. But the question is, how come so few seem to have it? Living life to the very full. To the full. A full life. Well, maybe they don't have a full life because they didn't read the right book. You know, people read a lot of books. They get a lot of good information. They enjoy life somewhat because of what they learned in the book, but they didn't read enough books to learn how to live it all and do it right. So maybe they didn't read the right book, or if they did, they didn't get the point. I remember back in 61, I was a trainee in a particular town in northern USA, and I was sitting on the back row that day listening to the minister who gave long sermons. And I don't even remember what he was talking about now. But after he finished, he walked all the way back where I was, turned and walked behind me. And he said, did you get the message, Vernon? Now, this was from my beloved pastor. Did you get the message? And I said, yes, I did, but I don't know what to do with it. And he didn't say a word after that. And I really didn't know exactly what to do to fulfill everything that he had been talking about that day. Apparently, he was talking about full life or something, and I didn't get the point. So, as I said, maybe we don't read the right book, or we don't get the point, is a reason why life may not be full. Quite often in trying to find how to live the full life, it's a matter of getting dogmatic statements put in the right place so that we can know what to do. Well, in certain books, dogma is placed in brackets or boxes to emphasize. Read this. This is important. Get this. Capture this. Remember this. In certain books, they want you to make sure that you do get the point. I guess they figure that if it isn't highlighted, you'll never get the point. And that is true to a degree. Sometimes you put, now they have the yellow pencils, and you can put the yellow pencil highlight. And it's funny to look at books where people have had it, and you bought a secondhand book, and they've highlighted it all the way through with certain marks, wanting them to get the point, and whoever got their book get the point, too. I'm sure you have, I have, but the question is, how often have you and I said, if only someone had told me, I wouldn't be in the situation that I'm in today? And then they sometimes add, I've had to learn everything the slow, hard way. That doesn't sound like a full life. They've had to learn it the slow, hard way, and they have had to learn it. You know, it'd be good if we had a book of conclusions, like a book that outlined the important facts of life so that we could get the point. It'd be nice to have a particular point, a book. A book that you all gave me the last time we were in Columbus many years ago was The Royal Path of Life. I discovered that book in the back part of our home, farm home we'd moved into, The Royal Path of Life. And I was fascinated as I read that. It was written by Yagi and somebody in Chicago in about 1880. But it was a powerful book, had many, many good points. And I was fascinated by the book and read it a good bit at that time. I've read it several times since. So it would be good if we had a book of conclusions that would show us how to live this full life so that we could get the point. Be nice if we had such a book. Well, we do. We do. We have such a book. It's one of the 66 books in what's called the Bible. However, the 66th book and many others in the Bible seem to get a bum rap from many individuals, even some of the ministers in the churches, and maybe even the Church of God had said that the message that is given in the 66th book in the Bible say its message was negative. And I agree, as you read the book from a particular perspective and looking at the book the way it's written and the way it comes across from especially the 1611 King James Version, it does seem nothing but negativism. And yet it's trying to tell us how to live life. Well, it's hard to live a good, full life if everything here is negative. And we've heard a lot of negativism, even in the Church of God, and even from the ministry or administrative ministers in God's church also, too, because of certain things that we taught that we don't stress as much today as we used to. As I said, even some ministers in the church have said that this message is negative. Well, in truth, the book that we're talking about really isn't negative. It's very, very positive. And it gives us extremely sound advice. As I said, although in the King James, it isn't always easy to get the point and see the flow, because of a particular word that is used that in the New King James Version and other versions is mentioned in a different perspective. Many people go to the ancient Greek philosophers for how to live a full life. And of course, the Greek philosophers did have some good points, and they go way, way back. You may have read the books of Socrates, I think about 460 to 400 B.C. He wrote a lot of good things, and he's a well-known philosopher. Plato was 427 to 347 B.C. and Aristotle 384 to 322 B.C. That's old, and they have a lot of good information, and people do and have based their life on the teachings of Plato, Socrates, and Aristotle. But the book we're talking about today goes back hundreds of years beyond them, 1,000 B.C. In truth. And this is what irritates me in reading personal development books and what they say, if you read this and you do this, you'll have a good life. They are plagiarizing what comes from this other book we're talking about, and they don't give that other book any credit whatsoever. Well, to a degree, Socrates and the others did that too. They are actually restating what you will find in this book, but others give it little or no credit. You know which book that is? Probably you do. You probably read it yesterday or sometime. Hopefully we all have. It's the book of Ecclesiastes. The book of Ecclesiastes. That book is the seventh of 11 books in that portion of the Bible called the Writing or Writings. It is the third division of what we call the Jewish Bible. You may have a Bible. I have one that's called the Jewish Bible, which we call the Old Testament, or agreement we make with God. Unfortunately, in the old King James Version, it's subtitled, The Preacher. Now, I have a little card that, and I may have said this to you, I have it right here. I have my address card. I've had it this way for quite a few years. Nowhere does it say, Preacher. And I give this to all people who are asking for a United Church of God. It doesn't have preacher. It doesn't have pastor. It doesn't have righteous, godly man. It has my name and Delee's name, where I live, our cell phones, and our email. And that's all. And I do this deliberately because when I'm talking to people, sometimes they say, well, what do you do for a living? And I say, I'm a preacher. Oh, that's all they say. Cuts down the conversation very quickly. So I don't put all those things on there. I don't say I'm a preacher. I just say whatever I say and hand them my card that has nothing on it that says in any way at all that I even remotely, I'm a Christian. Just got the information where you'll find me. So, unfortunately, the King James had subtitled The Preacher. To some, preachers may know about the Bible, and you can read many commentaries written by intelligent men who have spent years and years writing this and made lots of money writing it, and they can tell you an awful lot about the Bible, but they really don't understand certain parts of it. They don't understand what seems to be so simple to us. So, they know the Bible, but they don't seem to know much about the true biblical life. You study history, you'll find that many people have had their religion. And then on top of that, they've also had their life. And they didn't always match. So, they had to get a preacher for their religion. But neither the preacher nor the person knew that much about the Bible. It seems like when you read the history of the Bible, and as I said many times, there are five major religions. They don't agree with each other. They have lots of different beliefs about certain things. And they're all reading somewhat the same book. So apparently they need a preacher for their religion. But they need a guru. That is, someone with wise and sound conclusions in order for them to live a good life. Well, actually, that's what Ecclesiastes is. Ecclesiastes in the Hebrew is Koheleth. And it comes from the word kahal, K-A-H-A-L. And its meaning is to call, to assemble, or to convene. That's all the book means, to call, assemble, convene. We use other words and we use it all the time, and it sounds just human in one sense rather than religious or biblical. The other thing that we use is gather round and listen up. Gather round and listen up. So let's do that today and see the flow and the conclusions of this book as we gather round and listen up about Koheleth, or the preacher, or the words from Ecclesiastes. Let's go to Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verse 2 to begin with. And it lists a particular point about life. And in the Old King James, the way it's listed there is the reason why many, many people feel this book is completely and totally negative and contrary to true Christianity. So let's go Ecclesiastes chapter 1, and I have the New King James today. So, well, it says the same as the Old King James also. Chapter 1, verse 1 says, the words of the preacher. So you're listening to a preacher when you read this book. He was the son of David, and he also was a king, the king of Israel in Jerusalem. And the first thing he says is, now he's teaching us about life and how to live a good life, a full life. The first thing he says is vanity. Have you ever seen some people, man, are they ever vain? Or you can just tell by looking at them how full of vanity they are. Well, this says, vanity of vanities, says the preacher, all is vanity. Now, vanity isn't a good word as far as having a full life. So if indeed this is true and this is the only meaning of it, you don't want to read Ecclesiastes. The real word, the word vanity is H-A-B-A-L, and it means that which soon vanishes. Have you ever lived 30, 40, 50 years and you went into the bathroom one morning, looked in the mirror and you said, where did that white hair come from? Where did all those warts come from? Where did all this come from that I used to not have or I did have and it's not there anymore? Something has changed. Something has vanished and something else has taken its place. The meaning of the word habal, or in the Bible, vanity, is temporary. Now, when you say temporary, that's true. I understand that. I believe that. I've always believed that. But if you read it and God himself through this word said, Hargrove, you're nothing but vanity. Well, he might be right at times, but in general, the word means temporary. And when you read the next 5, 10, 15 pages in Ecclesiastes, I said we're going to talk about conclusions on how to live life. Well, if you look at this first one, it says there's nothing but vanity. Why continue? But if there are some extremely important conclusions about how to live life and have a full life, then we need to understand some principles. And one of the first things that's given is one of the first things we need to understand. You're not going to live forever in the flesh. May as well admit it. You're not going to live to be 2,000 years old. Who would want to anyway? But temporary. So you know that someday life is going to cease in the flesh. And we may as well realize that. Temporary. Everything is temporary. How many of you have a will made out already? You don't have to raise your hand, but just a question. Why do we have a will? We know we're going to die. What is dying? The cessation of life, making life temporary. So we have a will because we know we're going to be not going to be around forever in the flesh, and we need to make sure maybe our children should get what we have rather than the government getting it. And it takes 6 months or so to finally get what's yours given to your children. So a will is made because of the fact that we are temporary. How many of you have, you don't have to answer, you don't have to raise your hand, but just questions. How many of us have burial plots? Are you going to just disappear? Disappear. Where'd he go? I don't know. He disappeared. A burial plot. Do you have death insurance? How many of us are in talking to our children or our grandchildren or whoever is involved with our money? How many of us say, when I die? That's harsh. When I die, oh, Dad, don't say that. Or, oh, Mother, don't say that when I die. Well, are you going to die? Yes. You going to live forever? No, that's temporary. When I die, here's what I want done. Do we ignore death as if it will never occur? Sometimes we don't want to face it. We don't say die, we say when I pass on. Well, I passed on a lot of things, but I didn't die. And I'll pass on some more things too, until finally I do die. We know as Christians that we will not live forever in the flesh. But it's hard to grasp that, or to accept that, or to live realistically about it. It is said in quite a few articles about those who are at least 65 years old and how much money they have put up for death. Some, it's very, very little. Other, it's $200, $300. That's all they've ever developed in their life. Why do they do that? Well, it's either selfishness or they thought they were going to live and work forever. They just didn't think about, maybe I should set aside something for the next generation that has my name on it and help them a leg up, as we say. So the first thing that people read when they read Ecclesiastes, which is a book on how to live life in a good way, conclusions on how to live life, the first thing they come to is vanity. And all it means is temporary. And if we can ever comfortably accept that and live life accordingly, we can still have a very good, full life and enjoy it and be an example to other people. And when that kind of person finally dies or passes on, people are sad to see that because they lost someone they loved, someone who was a great person. Let's look in Ecclesiastes 1, verse 3. And this sounds, again, negative. What profit is a man from all his labor? What do you get? Nothing. Government gets 2/3 of it. We get the other 1/3 or whatever. Verse 4 says, one generation passes, another comes. Skipping down to verse 8, it said, all things are full of labor. Man cannot express it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. So, again, it is emphasizing, even in work and labor and other things, it is all temporary. And it will come to a close at some particular time. Now, there's another particular one given in verse 13. Verse 12 says, I, the preacher, this is Solomon, who was, shall we say, filthy rich, or filthy, filthy rich. He was rich beyond understanding. He was the preacher, the one that explained things. I, the preacher, was king. He wasn't just a nobody. He was known by all. He was the king, and yet he was young. And he had all these things. I was king over Israel and Judah. So, being young, having lots of money, coming from the king, the other king, his father, I set my heart to seek and search out by wisdom. Wisdom is the ability to make wise choices. So here was a young man who had it all. He wanted to learn how to make good choices concerning all that is done under heaven. And then he adds a word that makes, again, it sound like this is very negative. This burdensome task God has given to the sons of man by which we may be exercised. Well, it sounds like God is really horrible toward us. This burdensome task God has given us, life. I've seen all the works that are done under the sun, and indeed all is vanity and grasping for the wind. Have you ever tried to reach out and grasp the wind, get a handful of it, open your hand and see what it looks like? You can't see anything. You can grasp it again and again and again, and you'll never see anything because it's just wind. And that he's talking about all the works done under the sun, they're vanity and it's like grasping for the wind. Well, who'd want to live like that? It sounds extremely negative, but all again it's saying is it is temporary. So you best understand that, accept that, and live accordingly, and you'll have a good life because you know someday it's coming to a close. That takes character to understand that, to live accordingly. And character is what we're all about. Character is what we become. We talk, oh, that guy, man, is he ever a character. But we're talking about the quality of life is in the brain, the character that we are, that we become like God. In this same chapter 1, verse, oh, I've already read that. Chapter 2, verse 1, Solomon said, so he said, I said in my heart. Now, when you start saying something to your heart, you're musing about it pretty deeply. For it just to come and go and pass through your mind doesn't mean much. But when it's in your heart, and you've got it in your heart, and you're thinking about it in your heart, I said in my heart, come now, I'll test you with mirth. Therefore, enjoy pleasure. And then he said, this is futility. This is emptiness. Pleasure's not going to win everything. Now, some again would say it is it's talking in negatively about having a good time. Only the bad boys have good time. And so he said, surely this is negativity. This is vanity. This is emptiness. Well, depending on why we're doing it and what we're doing, but it isn't wrong to have mirth. Mirth meaning fun. Now, it is true that a lot of people, all they want is fun, 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 fun. And they never get serious about it. But it isn't wrong to be serious and have a little fun. Or would it better be all fun and a little seriousness? Surely this is negativity, vanity. No, all it means is, no matter how many times you laugh, no matter how much fun you have, there comes a day when it's over and done with, and we pass along. We pass into the graveyard for a while. In verse 2, he's talking about laughter. Ever notice when you go out to eat, you're sitting in restaurant, there's 20, 30, 40 people there. They are laughing and laughing and laughing and loud, and they have two, three, or four drinks, and they laugh more, and they're having so much fun. Well, he said, of laughter, it's madness, and of mirth. What does it accomplish? Well, it accomplishes enjoyment, but there's more to life than just that. A lot more than that. But it isn't wrong to have laughter or to laugh. It said, madness, if that's all we have is madness and anger, who'd want to live that way? So he said, I figured another way. I searched in my heart how to gratify my flesh with alcohol, in this case, wine, while guiding my heart with wisdom. In other words, keeping his brain active and good, made good choices. How to lay hold on folly till I might see what was good for the sons of men to do under heaven all the days. I made great work. So he turned to construction of homes and buildings and other things. He thought that would make him feel good. Well, it does, and it's wonderful to be able to do that. I made my works great. I built myself houses and planted myself vineyards. I made gardens and orchards and all kinds of fruit trees. I made water pools. And he also had servants or slaves. I had greater possessions of herds and flocks than any or all who were in Jerusalem before me. And I gathered myself silver, gold, and special treasures. So it said in verse 9, I became great and excelled more than all who were before me in Jerusalem. Also my wisdom remained me. And whatever I desired, I didn't keep for myself. But remember, he was talking about all these things in verse 11. I looked on all the works that my hands had done and the labor in which I toiled, and indeed all was negativity, worthless. No, the word vanity meaning not totally complete, temporary. He did all of this and it was good. It was really good what he did, but it was temporary. And pretty soon he passed on and someone took his place. And he didn't have anything to do with it anymore. So it depended on how he was doing it as far as his character was concerned. He said, there was no profit under the sun. Well, that's not true. It's not just like grasping for the wind only. It's a matter of developing godly character, knowing that in the long run, we will pass on, we will die, and life is temporary. You've heard me say before, I didn't do it recently, but go to funerals and they open the casket and you can walk by and look at the person in the casket. Sometimes people get so torn up, they fall on the casket and they cry and they weep and they almost climb in the casket and they just cannot accept that they're dead. Well, when nobody's watching me, I walk over to the dead person in the casket and reach out quietly and poke the hand or poke the arm with my finger. Not once have I ever been slapped. Why? They're dead. Their temporary life is over. And they're waiting for the second resurrection or the first resurrection in which they will be different. So verse 12, he said, I turn myself to consider wisdom and madness and folly. You know, for what can the man do who succeeds the king? What the king before him did, that's about all. I saw that wisdom excels folly. Light excels darkness. The wise man's eyes, meaning the one who is not foolish, who makes good choices, the wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walks in darkness. But then he said, I perceive that the same happens to everybody. Doesn't matter. We're all temporary. We're all someday going to pass along. In chapter, let's see, one other point I want to make here. Yes. As I said, when he uses the word vanity, it seems like everything is negative. But notice in verse 24 of chapter 2, well, read verse 23 first. All his days are sorrowful. The man that's laboring, all his days are sorrowful. All his work burdensome. Even in the night, his heart takes no rest. This is vanity. Evil? No. Temporary. Nothing's better for a man that he should eat and drink, that his life should enjoy good in his labor. This I saw was from the hand of God. So if we eat and drink properly and that we enjoy good in our labor, that's the hand of God. Who can eat or who can have enjoyment more than I? God gives wisdom and knowledge and joy to a man who's good in his sight. But to the sinner, the one who's living beyond the rules, above the rules, outside the rules, he gives the work of gathering and collecting that he may give him to who is good before God. In other words, other people may take what we labored to have that we didn't have the sense to know how to use, and it's given to somebody else. That truly is awful. But verse 24 shows that we should be able to live a good life and a full life. And I think we talk about second generation people. One of the things that as second generation, and I'm almost that, I was 20 when I first heard the truth. Life, even after, if you don't know the truth till you're 40, 50, 60, or 70, or maybe other. It still doesn't mean that life is empty and worthless. It just means that maybe you'll have to work a little harder in a sense, but you can still have a very, very full life. Then in chapter 3, he says, to everything there is a season, a time for every purpose under the heavens. If everything was the same all the time, we would really get upset over it. One of the things I like about Ohio is the change, four changes of the seasons. In Arizona, it's hot, period, at least in Phoenix. Now, in the upper cities, northern of there, you're 6,000 feet elevation. We were 5,000+ feet elevation. It was kind of warm, warm and yet cool too. So he said, there's a time to be born, a time to die, to plant, to pluck, to kill, to heal. You say, kill? Yeah, have you ever shot a deer? You ever plucked a chicken and ate it? Chicken feathers? A time to break down and a time to build up, to weep and to laugh, mourn and to dance. Ah, you can't dance if you're a Christian. That's sinful. Well, if you dance like a lot of people do dance, you may need to change, and it's not quite as honorable as it ought to be. But it isn't a sin to dance. A time to cast away stones and a time to gather. A time to embrace, and there's a time to refrain from embracing. Maybe it's best you don't hug them and kiss them. A time to gain and a time to lose. A time to keep and throw away. We did that as a church this last week, wasn't it? We had a garage sale. And you know what? We gave away our junk. And people bought our junk. Now, not everything there was junk. Some was really nice. But for some people's junk is another piece of a person's treasure. So a time to borrow and a time to throw away, a time to tear and to sow, to keep silence. There's a time to speak and a time to shut up. Some don't know when to shut up and others don't know when to speak. A time to love and a time to not love so much, to hate. Doesn't mean you hate the person, but you can hate what they're doing. A time to war. War is solving difficulties in a strong way. Time of peace. He said, what profit has the worker from that in which he labors? I've seen the God-given task with which the sons of men are to be occupied. He made everything beautiful. He put eternity in their hearts, except that no one can find out what the work of God does from beginning to end. Well, that's true. We don't know everything from the end from the beginning. But notice, he said, I know that nothing is better for them to rejoice and to do good in their lives. So maybe you don't know everything. Maybe you haven't done everything you ought to do. But it says, rejoice and do good in the life. And that every man, woman, child, person should eat, drink, and enjoy the good of his labor. That's the gift of God. That's one of the important principles of life that is so important. Eat, drink, and enjoy. You see sometimes people, it's almost like they're pushing the food down and eat. And they got jaws sticking 6 feet out, it looks like, at times they're eating. And I'm exaggerating a little bit, but eating should be a joyful thing. It's what makes us live. And depending on what we eat, we live longer and better. So every man should eat and drink and enjoy the good of all his labor. That's the gift of God. I know that whatever God does, it's going to be forever. You can't add to it and take from it. So in chapter 4 now, beginning in verse 7. point. Chapter 4, verse 1, he said, I saw all the oppression that's done under the sun. Tears of the oppressed, no comforter. And that is sad when you see certain religious individuals stealing young girls to become sexual slaves. That's sad. But how many of us can stop that or change that? It hurts, but you can't do it. Said, they have no comforter. On the side of their oppressors, there's power. So you can't do much about it. Therefore, I praise the dead. They were already dead because he knew, well, we know there will be a resurrection. He said, better than both is he who has never existed. Well, some truth there. In verse 7 of this chapter, it says, I returned and I saw, now again it says vanity, which is negativity. But this just means futility or vanity or temporary. I returned and I saw how temporary life is under the sun. There is one alone without a companion. There is another son, or they have neither son nor brother. Yet there's no end of all his labor, nor is his eye satisfied with riches. He never asks, for whom do I toil and deprive myself of good? He's not thinking of the future, but only of himself. This is temporary. And a grave, it may mean grave in the soil. This is temporary and a grave misfortune. Then he comes to this point. And if it were done idealistically, this would be a marvelously wonderful thing in the sight of God. Two are better than one. A lot of people don't believe that because two married and they divorced and they divorced and they divorced and they divorced. And it's been no good. Something happened. Two for them is not better than one. One is better off by itself. They learned the hard way. But it shouldn't have to be that way. Two are better than one because they have a good reward for their labor. If they fall, one can lift up the companion. But woe to the one who's alone when he or she falls. There's no one to help him. And the next one, this may a little sound sensual, but it's realistic. Again, if two lie together, they can keep warm. He's not talking about lying words, but, you know, they get close to each other. They pull the cover over and they lie together. If two lie together, they can keep warm. But how can one be warm alone? Though one may be overpowered by another, two can withstand him. And a threshold cord is quickly broken. So he's showing it's not negative here, it's positive, and it depends on how we approach these principles and how well we follow these principles. That life can be very, very full and good. In chapter 5, verse 8, it says, if you see the oppression of the poor, and we can see it today all over the world, the violent perversion of justice, the righteousness and of providence, do not marvel at the matter. For high official watches over high official, and higher officials are over them. Meaning, God sees, God will take care of. Moreover, the profit of the land is for all. Even the king is served from the dirt of the field. But some feel like they're God and they own even the dirt. They haven't yet learned that someday they will be put in the dirt and that will be the end of them for a while till they come up and the resurrection God has given and they learn the principles of life to be really happy and enjoy things. In verse 18, he said, here's what I've seen. It is good and fitting for one to eat and drink. Now, he didn't say eat and get gluttonous or drunkenness, but to eat your food, drink your liquid, wine, beer, food, whatever, water, to enjoy the good of all the labor in which he toils under the sun all the days of his life, which God gives him, for that's his heritage. As for every man to whom God has given riches and wealth and given him power to eat of it, to receive his heritage and rejoice in his labor, this is God's gift. Well, you wouldn't get that answer from a lot of people. God is trying to take everything away from them. Everything they do is wrong. In chapter 6, this is a good point. On how to have a full life, but you don't think so sometimes while you're doing this. Chapter 6 and verse 2, a man to whom God has given riches and wealth and honor so that he lacks nothing for himself of all he desires, yet God does not give him the power to eat it. Well, now that makes God sound like that God is at fault. God gave him all these things, and God hasn't given him any power to eat it. Who's going to stop a person with that? But a foreigner consumes it. This is emptiness and an evil affliction. In other words, we do all the work, and yet someone else takes it away from us. He says that we are to be doing good. In verse 4, it comes in vanity and departs in darkness, and its name is covered with darkness. So, verse 5, though it has not seen the sun or known anything, is more unrestful. Even if he lives 1,000 years twice, but has not seen goodness. In other words, he's talking about living a good life. I don't want to live a good life. I want to sing and dance and raise a little hell and have a good time. But this talks about living a good life. It said, don't they all go to the same place? So why not go to that same place because you were a good person? Being good, living a good life. Now, he adds a little something to it in chapter 7, verse 16. He says, do not be overly righteous. Have you ever seen that in yourself or anybody else? Have you ever seen a self-righteous person? Irritates you, doesn't it? A self-righteous person. Nobody's right but him or her. And they're always right. Self-righteous. Do not be overly righteous, nor be overly wise. Meaning having the answers for everything. You want to know something? Ask me, I'll tell you. I know it all. He said, why should you destroy yourself? Now, on the other hand, he said, don't be overly wicked. Well, I don't know that you should be wicked at all, but in other words, raise hell all the time. Don't be overly wicked. And don't be foolish. Why should you die before your time? Don't have to. He said in verse 18, and a very important point, it is good that you grasp this, and also not remove your hand from the other. For he who fears God or respects God will escape them all. In other words, if we live by God's ways, we're going to miss out on a lot of the things that would hurt us, and we're going to include in our life a lot of the things that God does or asks us to do will give us a good life. So the conclusion of this in chapter 8, verse 1, who is a wise man? Who knows the interpretation of a thing? The wise man's wisdom makes his face shine. So in verse 2, he said, keep the king's commandments for the sake of your oath to God. Do not be hasty to go from his presence. Don't take your stand of an evil thing, for he does whatever pleases him. And in 4, where the word of a king is, there's power. And who may say to him, what do you think you're doing? Well, he could say, I'm the king. You forget that? He who keeps his command will experience nothing harmful. And a wise man's heart discerns both time and judgment, or when to do it and when not to do it. Because every matter, there is a time and a judgment. So we need to keep the rules of life, even sometimes the rules of the state, but especially the rules of God, and know when to do it and when not to do it and how to do it. That's very, very important. Now in chapter 9 and verse 3, he says, this is an evil in all that is done under the sun, that one thing happens to all. So, what do you mean, one thing happens to all? Well, we just keep reading and find out. Truly, the hearts of the sons of men are full of evil. Madness is in their hearts while they live, and after that, they die. No matter who they are, how wealthy they are, how poor they are, how big they are, how strong they are, how intelligent they are, ultimately, they die. And then verse 4 is a really funny one. But for him who is joined to all the living, there's hope. A living dog is better than a dead lion. That's a funny one. A living dog is better than a dead lion. A dead lion, if he's living, is a lot better if you have him trained to not bite you. He can be a good thing. But if he's dead, he's no better than a dog. Then in verse 5, he comes to the point. The living know that they will die. Really? Do the living know they're going to die? Well, they've heard of it. And they may halfway sneakingly think about it. But to acknowledge it and make their will and like one of the older men of the Old Testament said to his son, son, I go the way of all flesh. So the son knew his father was going to die. The living know that they will die. The dead, they don't know anything. They're not up in heaven looking down on those who are living. And they're not in hell, writhing in the hot fire. They don't know anything. They're dead. They have no more reward. The memory of them is forgotten. I have a list of all those whose I have performed the ceremony of their burial. I don't remember how many years. Well over 100, 150, something like that. I look at someone and think, do I remember that person? Where was that? Who were they? The memory of them is dead. It's forgotten. Their love, their hatred, their envy have now perished. Nevermore will they have a share in anything done under the sun. Well, they will have a share, but it won't be in the world that we know it today. And so in verse 7, he said, in light of this, in light of all of that, which sounds very negative, but it isn't. It's just appropriate. It is shows the temporary part of life. He says in verse 4, that being the case, go, or means live, eat your bread with joy. Do you ever eat your food as if it were the worst thing you ever did, and you know why you're doing this, and what good does it do? So you just wolf it down. But this says, eat your food with joy. Drink your wine. So he didn't say, don't ever drink wine. But you better be careful. He said, drink your wine with a merry heart. And that doesn't mean after you've had so much wine, you are a merry heart. but drink and enjoy it. For God has already accepted your works. Let your garments be white. It would look like 95% of the people in the USA today have never read this verse. It looks like they've never washed their pants in 6 months. But here it says, let your garments be white, your head like no oil. Live joyfully with the wife whom you love, instead of some of the biggest concerns in the pro football program is what certain famous individuals making millions of dollars have done to their wife. And the leaders are embarrassed and ashamed. This says, live joyfully with the wife whom you love all the days of your temporary, not useless, not vain, but temporary life. So we've lived to be 50 years of age. Are we going to live to be 550 years? I don't think so, and frankly, I hope not. But however long it is, live joyfully the wife whom you love all the days of your temporary life, which he, God, has given you under the sun, all the days of your temporariness. For that's the portion in life, the labor which you perform under the sun. So, again, he adds, whatever your hand finds to do, gripe about it. If that's all you're going to pay me, forget it. Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with your might. There is no work or device or knowledge or wisdom in the grave where you're going, because you won't know anything. So Solomon said, I returned and saw under the sun that. And then you read quite a bit of words here about what he saw. And coming down to chapter 10. Some of these things are so funny you have to laugh about the temporary actions of life. Dead flies putrefy the perfumer's ointment. Ever try to swat flies? Finally you swat them and it falls in your milk. Dead flies putrefy ointment. They cause it to give off a foul odor. So does a little folly to one respected for wisdom and honor. So we need to be careful what we do, that we follow the rules appropriately, live them as God would want us to do, and things will go very well. Then in verse 16, it says, woe to you, O land, when your king is a child, and your princes feast in the morning, meaning they're gluttons. They eat all the time, but they don't do the right things. Because it said in verse 17, blessed when your king is the son of nobles, and your princes feast at the proper time for strength and not for drunkenness. We've seen that in the English kingdom of certain things that were done that were not appropriate, and it took away from the honor and dignity of the monarchy. So it shows it isn't wrong to be a king's son and have lots of things that are perks and good for you, but don't be foolish and destroy them. That's all. Then in chapter, let's see, 10, verse 18, because of laziness, the building decays. That's an easy one to understand. Pricks a little bit if we are the one who is lazy and we find things that don't get done and probably never will get done because we say, well, I don't have time for it, but what the truth is, we're lazy, and we don't do it. Idleness of the hands. Then it talks in verse 19, and this is what many people have trouble producing in their life. A feast is made for laughter, we're going to go to the feast. We're going to drink a little wine and have a good time. We're going to laugh. We're going to meet old friends. It was two nights ago, I believe. I was sitting at my desk, and I pulled out something that I had in my desk for a long time, and I looked. It was a card. And I looked at the name, Ronald Miller. Well, I went to college with him in 57 to 61, I believe, in Pasadena. We worked together in Idaho stacking lumber in 58. I hadn't seen him for 40 years, probably. He used to work in Canada. So it had his name, it had his address, it had his phone number, and I thought, I wonder if I could find him. So I called that number, and a female voice said, hello, and I said, is this the home of Ron Miller? And he said, yes, it is. I'll get him. I was thrilled. And we sat and talked for maybe an hour. We were friends for a long time, then we were separated because of the work of God. The feast is made for laughter. We're going to the feast. I don't know where he's going, if he's going. I didn't ask any of that because I know things have changed in 40 years. But we enjoyed each other's company on the phone. And it was good, and we had a little laughter here and there. And it said, a feast is made for laughter, and wine makes merry, especially if you drink just a little more than you should. Then it says something that is hard to understand. I can't make that work. It said, money answers everything. Well, doesn't answer my problem because I don't have enough, we say. Why don't we have enough? Well, they don't pay me enough. Why don't they pay you? When a ship sinks, they get rid of all the stuff that doesn't need to be on the boat. And the same is true of corporations. When things go wrong, they get rid of those that are not building the corporation. And so they don't have any money. Money answers everything. We don't worship it, but it helps life. And so we need to learn how to manage our money, make, in a sense, and also manage our money properly to have a full life. You don't have a full life if you don't have any money. So that's a big point. And it's given here as one of the key things for living a full life. We are to worship it, but we are to learn to manage it. Not to lust after it, but to use it properly for the necessities of life. Then in chapter 11, verse 8, if a man lives many years and rejoices in them all, yet let him remember the days of darkness, for they will be many. All that is coming is temporary. That again sounds like negativity. All it's saying is not everything is going to be perfect, and there may be some times when life won't be too good, but we need to remember those dark days. And I will say one thing that personal development people say that is very good, that we are not too good at times about in the Church of God, and it says, learn by your mistakes. I find it difficult sometimes to quit brooding over my mistakes. And I see that in people in the Church of God. They're still brooding and brooding and brooding over what they did was wrong. They never have time to do what's right because they're still brooding. So it said, let him remember the days of darkness, but it doesn't mean remember it to the point that's all he thinks about. We are told to learn from our sins and our weaknesses and then move on in forward condition. Because it won't be long for some of us that life will be over. And then we usually read this verse 9 and to the young people, well, it applies to all of us, rejoice O young man, or old man, old woman, young woman, in your youth. And it said in verse 10, remove sorrow from your heart and put away evil from your life, for childhood and youth are temporary. You're not going to be 15 forever. You'll be 16 and then 17 and then 25 and then 40 and then 50 and 70. And you will say, where did it go? I don't know. It just went. So it says, remove sorrow from your heart, put away evil from your flesh. In other words, find out the right rules and live by them if you want a full life as a youth. You can have it. And then chapter 12, we always read this to the children, but it's written to all of us. He says, remember your Creator. Are we the result of evolution? Or are we the result of a Creator? Remember, in the days of your youth, in the days of your old years, remember the Creator. Before the difficult days come, the years draw near when you say, I don't have any pleasure in life. It's just not good anymore. I don't enjoy life. Why? Well, I got so many pains and aches and so many things wrong with me. Why? I don't know. It's just the way it is when you're 60. Doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be. You can read about those men who, in the early 1900s, discovered food and what it did to people's lives and how they worked on their life with all of these things. And they made lots of money telling other people how to live in the early 1900s what to eat and what not to eat. And it's amazing what those men could do because what they put in their mouth. Just an amazing thing. And so it says, remember your Creator. Well, what does your Creator say? Don't be a glutton. Be sure you eat the proper things. Don't eat certain things. And then the rest of that chapter goes on talking about the things that, in verse 8 it said, well, no, let's read verse 7. When the dust will return to the earth as it was. Meaning, we're going to die and go back to the dirt. The Spirit will return to God who gave it. Then in verse 8, he ends it by this very negative verse. At least it appears to be a negative, but it isn't. It's an absolute truth. And if we don't understand that, it will not help us in life. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. All that means is everything is temporary. No matter who you are, how big you are, how strong you are, how wealthy you are, whether you're male or female, whether you're intelligent or stupid, all is temporary. And he emphasizes it again in the latter part of 8. All is temporary. All is temporary. So, in verse 13, verse 10, the preacher sought to find acceptable words, and what was written was upright, words of truth, speaking about reading books and other things to learn. There are a lot of books we can read, not written by converted people, not in the Bible, but a lot of them have good things. So we should learn to glean from those books, kind of like the tree of good and evil, get the good from it and throw away the other stuff. Instead of making many books, there's no end. You can read and read and read till you're blind, and you still won't have all the truth because you're reading the wrong book or the wrong part of the book. Making many books, there's no end, and much study is wearisome to the flesh. So he said, that being the case, what is the conclusion of this whole matter? How can we have a full life? Sounds very religious, but we find from experience that it is true. Fear God, and we use that negatively, fear meaning terrified, frightened, don't come near, like the Israelites said, Moses, you go up the mountain and you tell us. We're not going to go because we'll die if we do. That's not the true God. Well, that was the true God, but that's not what God has for us. They used it as an excuse not to obey God. It could mean respect God's commandments, because if we respect God's commandments, we will respect and we will come to learn to love God because of the way he is. Fear God, keep his commandments, for this is man's all. Sooner or later, he said, God will bring every work into judgment, including the secret stuff. Ooh. The secret stuff. Whether good or evil. That is the conclusion. Even reading the book, The Royal Path of Life, written in about 1880, has a lot of good things that help us to live life and to do it properly. It has about marriage and being a child, a boy, a girl. It mentions a lot of things that are just principles that are good and right. Written in the 1880 language, but nevertheless really good information, because they wrote it from the principles in the Bible. He said, fear God, respect God, keep his commandments. In other words, keep our feet on the right path. And in essence, God will take care of everything else. It takes a while to believe that. But once we believe it, not because someone forced us to believe it, but because we believed it. I don't know if I mentioned it before, but when Herbert Armstrong, when he was in 1927, he proved to himself by reading the Bible that Saturday was the Sabbath. He had told his wife, if you don't give up that stupid Sabbath, I'm going to divorce you. She said, fine, but prove me wrong first. He couldn't do it. And I will have to say, with all of his ego, because he admitted he had ego, with all of his ego, he swallowed his pride and kept the Sabbath. And humanly speaking, because he taught the truth, he may have done other things that weren't all that nice, but because he taught the truth, many of us owe a lot to him because he taught us God's truth. There are other things he did teach that weren't truth. You can cast that away, but still the principles of life, and especially about God's laws. Life is temporary. That being the case, wouldn't it be wonderful if we could get our foot in the right groove early in life and follow it? If we could navigate the passages of life and make decisions, right decisions, all along the way. Well, if you're young enough, you can all the way. Those who are a little older, we still can, but we may have to make up a few things because of what we've done. They weren't so good. But we can and we will if we do what the ecclesiastical speaker indicated. As I said, gather around and listen up. So if we notice the highlighted conclusions, if we attend to the correct dogmas, if we imbibe the bottom line, we will grow and we will live to have a very, very full life.